eyes, eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be, as yours are. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush addresses the nation in primetime tonight. Mr. Bush will announce his intention to deploy 21,500 U.S. troops to Iraq in support of Iraqi forces. The president will make concessions on certain White House policies regarding the war in Iraq, including his decision to limit troop levels. The new White House plan includes a new spending proposal of $1 billion for Iraqi jobs and infrastructure, plus another $6 billion for the surge in U.S. support troops. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is pledging to take a vote on that troop increase. Leaders in the Senate proposed a symbolic debate on the president's plan. Former Clinton White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta insists that an increase in troops, quote, won't work. In Iraq, several influential Sunni Muslim scholars criticize the new White House strategy as ineffective, predicting that many more Iraqis will die as a result. Meanwhile, in and around Baghdad today, 60 more bodies were found, apparent victims of sectarian violence. On Capitol Hill, there's a pending vote in the House regarding an increase in the federal minimum wage to $7.25 an hour. Southern California fire officials continue their investigation into Monday's wildfire in Malibu that destroyed 5 homes and damaged several others, estimated cost standing at $60 million. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez took the oath of office for his 3rd successive term. His inaugural speech included his plans to steer the country towards socialism. In Nicaragua, leftist Daniel Ortega took office again. He has close ties with both Hugo Chavez and the communist Cuban government. U.S. government officials deny U.S. airstrikes this week in southern Somalia, and now there's word from the Somalian government that a senior al-Qaeda suspect was killed by one of those supposed strikes. Americans spent nearly $2 trillion for health care in 2005. That's a 6.9% increase, according to government. Hospital care accounted for more than 31% of health costs. The World Health Organization says there's been a surge in avian flu infections and deaths in Asia. Scientists still attempting to figure out why the virus seems to spread faster during the winter months. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
A housing study released today says wages have not kept up with housing costs, making it difficult for many Americans to afford their own home. Even though housing prices have declined 2% this year, mortgage rates rose. Medium-priced homes have become less affordable. The National Climatic Data Center reporting that 2006 was the warmest year on record for the U.S. Last year, the average temperature for the 48 contiguous states was 55 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's more than 2 degrees warmer than average. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi banning smoking effective immediately in the Speaker's lobby off the House floor. Massachusetts Senator Edward Kennedy says everyone in the U.S. should have health care coverage. Medicare should be extended to everyone. The new law for tax write-offs now means donors must specifically itemize all items given to charity. The IRS will no longer allow guesstimates on tax forms. The internal advocacy group for the IRS says the tax agency should stop using private agencies to collect delinquent taxes. The group told Congress that IRS collectors are better trained and more efficient. Light sweet crude trading at $53.55 a barrel. That's down $1.62. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow up 26 points at 12,442. NASDAQ up 15. The S&P 500 up 3. And there's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Okay! Don't you! Stop America!
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, it's 6.5 minutes after the hour, after 6 p.m. here on the East Coast. God only knows what time it is where you are. But the it most importantly is, at least on this part of the planet, Wednesday. And you know what Wednesday means.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn straight. And that, in short, it is prayer meeting night. I am Brother Bob Kincaid. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and you are welcome at the altar thereof. Lots doing in the world today, of course. Let's see, we're about 3 hours from liftoff at the White House. I'd say dear leader's probably getting his first Xanax about now. You know, the one that sort of makes him look like a deer in the headlight, and he just sort of sits there and his head never moves, and he reads what's on the teleprompter where Carl's written all the little short words. We're going to have a surge in Iraq. And that means we will have more troops there. And I can, yada, 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 yada. We already know what the speech is, don't we? And of course, little bits have been leaked, quote unquote, to the press. And the leakage is along the line. What was one of the things mentioned? We'll send 11,000 right off the bat, but we'll hold back the other 11,000 as a carrot to help the Iraqis. To convince the Iraqis to take responsibility for their own actions. God bless America. We went in there. We blew the country all to smithereens. I mean, you know, the real kingdom come treatment. And now we're telling the Iraqi government that the Iraqi government has to take responsibility for the fact that we've destroyed their daggum country. Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? You little old lady spilling coffee all over your hoo-hoos have to take responsibility for the fact that you spilled scalding hot coffee from McDonald's all over it. It's not McDonald's fault if you have to have massive reconstructive plastic surgery on that thing. You're not using it anyway. You're an old lady.
Oh, God.
Take responsibility for it. I mean, isn't it... If indeed it turns out that that is part of the thing, is that we were going to send 22,000, but we're going to send the first 11,000 and then the second 11,000 as an inducement to the Iraqis to get their crap in order, Isn't that the same tired old right-wing Republican take personal responsibility for your own actions because we can't be bothered to take personal responsibility for ours speech? Isn't it? I've said 100 times, if I've said it once on this program, that these good-for-nothing SOBs have not had a fresh idea since Abraham Lincoln. I mean, greatest period of noteworthy Republican control of government, i.e., from the end of the Wilson administration to the end of the Hoover administration, in which you got Warren Gamaliel Harding, America's stupidest president, until that appellation was taken away from him in a runaway by the current occupant. Warren Gamaliel Harding, who fathered an illegitimate child in the Oval Office. Yeah, they forgot about Warren G. Harding when they were busy hollering about whether or not Bill Clinton did yada, yada, yada. Nobody was out that... Everybody knew what Warren G. Harding was up to. Nobody was out to impeach him for it. But then again, with Warren G. Harding, it seemed kind of like kicking a person when they're down. But anyway, Warren G. Harding did America the favor of passing away while in office. And was replaced by Silent Cal, Calvin Coolidge, who apparently ascribed to the ancient maxim, better to be silent and thought a fool than to speak and prove it. Silent Cal, Amherst University, Amherst College. Yeah, pretty sure, because he is... my college fraternity's only claim to the presidency. And, of course, Cal was followed by what? Hubert Hoover, whatever. And all of those monsters and incompetents and boobies and sex freaks, you know. I mean, Warren G. did get it on in the Oval Office, you know. But all of the, they had one thing in common, and that was the idea that business could do no wrong, excuse me, and government existed for the benefit of business. In fact, in one of his less than silent moments, Silent Cal came out sometime in the 20s and declared, "The business of America is business." And they were so effective, that gang of Republican thugs, that they drove the federal government, they drove the entirety of America straight into the ground without firing a shot. And up until the Republican control of government that we had between 1994 and 2006, speaking primarily of Congress, and the Republican control of the White House that began in 2000 and seems like it will never end. That was the benchmark standard for screwing up government. Harding, Coolidge, Hoover. But now, just as the Warren G. Harding, cold and moldy in the grave, was compelled to give up his status as most profoundly ignorant, stupid, amazing how he can breathe, walk, and chew gum at the same time, ignorant president of all history, just as he had to give that up to dear leader, Dim Sun, so too will we have to give up our notion that, you know, gee, it can't get any dumber than what dear leader has already done, because it's gonna. Do you remember, what's the comic strip? It appears on Bart Cop every so often, every day or so, just about. It's like clip art with... Brilliant writing for the clip art characters. I think it's called Get Your War On. Do you ever read that? And in today's issue of Bart Cop, the question is put, whatever happened to go long, go hard, or go home? Now it's been replaced by a surge. Of course, I can't hear surge without, in my mind's eye, seeing Jethro Bodine declaring, "Uncle Jed, I'm either going to be a fry cook, a brain surgeon, or a trolley conductor." I'm leaning toward trolley conductor because they get to wear that blue surge suit and wear one of them nickel squirters. And somehow or another, I don't think the comparison's ever been drawn because Max Baer Jr. was big boy. I don't think the comparison's ever been drawn. But does it ever occur to you that that's what we've got? The love child of Green Acres Ebb and Jethro Bodine occupying the White House? Where's Swamp Rat when you need him? He does great graphics. Wouldn't you love to see Poppy Bush and that hateful old beast Babs Bush done up as Jethro Bodine and Ebb from Green Acres? And then, of course, their love child would have to be GW in the form of some sort of chimpanzee. But that's what we get tonight. Tonight, we get a Xanaxed or Valiumed up deer leader with a big old box in the back of his suit explaining to America that he will by God do what he by God pleases to do, and there is nothing we can by God do to stop him. And you know what? I fear, to a certain extent, he is correct. Because ultimately, he will do what he wants to do because he believes that his power, and you know, this is no hyperbole on my part. George W. Bush believes that his power is all-encompassing. And it's disturbing as hell. Even if Congress should dig deep and find the courage to refuse funds for this escalation of the war, this McCain doctrine, this Republican doctrine, he's gonna do it anyway. The plans are already on the table, according to published reports, for this transfer of, guys who hang drywall for a living and paint houses and cut trees and direct traffic and answer fire calls, you know, the ordinary everyday Joes and Janes of America, for him to start shipping them away from their loved ones and the necessary societal functions that they fill and honor in this country. It's going to start in 3 weeks. Whether you like it, whether I like it, or whether anybody else likes it. Because George Bush has been told by his handlers, you can do anything you want to. You're the president. I mean, I'm not making that up. That's the unitary executive. That is the discussion we did not get to have during the love fest that was the confirmation of Samuel Alito. Because, and it all goes back, it always does, doesn't it, with any of this Republican presidential evil, it all goes back to Richard Nixon, who told David Frost in an interview point blank that the President of the United States is, as a matter of law, incapable of violating the law. And if you just let that thing roll around your noggin like a marble spinning in a fishbowl for a little while, that'll make you want to scream. Just play with it for a minute. Richard Nixon put forward the theory that is held to by the Bush administration that there is not one single thing on planet Earth that a sitting president of the United States might do that would be deemed a violation of the law of the United States of America. Sunshine, that includes murder, rape, arson, murder for hire, conspiracy to commit, obstruction of justice, witness tampering. Speeding. Hot checks. Possession of burglar's tools. Stream littering. Every single thing in the United States or any political subdivision thereof, parking in front of a fire hydrant, parking in front of the police department in the police car's only spot, every single thing that is contemplated as the least violation of any law of the United States of America is impossible for a sitting president to commit. Damned interesting, though, isn't it? They've hauled out that old chestnut, and they are, you know... Oh, what's that? One of my favorite films, True Grit. And one of my favorite actors, Struther Martin. Speaking of young, what's the character's name? Played by Kim Darby. From near Yell County. Yeah, Maddie. Going on about, I will have my family's attorney lawyer Daggett contact you. And at one part Struther Martin looks up and says, Lawyer Daggett. She draws that Lawyer Daggett like a gun. Or maybe it's John Wayne. Yeah, I know it's a John Wayne movie. It's still good. They draw unitary executive like a gun. And George Bush can literally go against the wishes of the people of the United States and the Congress thereof and send 22,000 men and women and, by definition, some statistical component thereof to their death, to a horrible, bloody, gruesome death. And it is the Republican Party and the Bush administration's position that no one can do a blessed thing about it. Although, if you look back, they weren't so fond of that unitary executive notion when it came to, because, you know, if you bring up Bill Clinton to any Republican, they'll say, it's not that he lied about sex. Pardon me, I'll be back. Anybody get a Kleenex? It's not that he lied about sex. It's that he lied. And he lied under oath. Well, you know what? Under the Bush administration definition of the unitary executive, presidents can lie under oath. They can lie under oath. They can lie under an old willow tree. They can lie under a car. They can lie under a naked woman or a naked boy. They can lie. And according to people like Dick Cheney and the enablers around Dimson, it is not a crime. So, welcome to Wednesday, the 10th day of January, 2007, titular President of the United States is preparing to look straight into a camera, and he's not going to say, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. He's not going to say that. He's going to say, I'm sending 22,000 of your mothers and fathers and husbands and brothers and sisters and sons and daughters to a needless, useless, stinking, dirty, filthy war of choice from which many of them will never return, and those who do return will likely return with their lives and their minds or their bodies shattered irrevocably. And if anyone dares ask him how he can do it, he will answer, well, it's sort of like the answer from this is prayer meeting, so we can go Bible. It's sort of like the answer when Moses queries and says, who shall I tell Pharaoh sent me? The answer comes from the burning bush. Oh, well, there's an answer. There's a coinky dinky. Burning bush. This bush has set the whole damn world on fire. Not just a shrubbery. Comes the answer from the burning bush. Say, I am that I am. Nothing else really makes for any sort of an appropriate response to what we're going to be handed tonight. I am what I am, and that's all that I am, says W. the President Man. Toot, toot. Which is probably what he would like to have instead of the Xanax, Xanax, or the Valium, Valium. Just a little bump to help me get through the speech, Carl. Come on. So, you know, welcome to the 10th of January, 2007. Where an entire body of law developed since roughly the 13th century gets chucked out the daggum window so that the decider can say that he's going to willy-nilly send troops. There is only one thing, and you know it. There is only one thing that will stop what is being done tonight. Oh, settle down and don't get your maiden forms in a twist, Agent Fred. I'm not talking about that. There is only one thing that will stop what is going down tonight. It is contained within the Constitution of the United States of America, and it is, in a word, you know the word. Say it with me. Scream it from the damn rooftops. Holler it to your elected representatives until they dread to see your name on one of those little pink you had while you were gone phone message hoosuses. While you were gone, Mr. Joe Citizen called to say, impeach the bastard! If you have any regard, if you have any regard whatsoever for those 22,000 mothers, sons, husbands, wives, daughters, fathers, cousins, aunts, uncles, if you have any regard for them whatsoever, stand up for them. And there is only one remedy: impeachment. I'd like to have your thoughts. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Brother Bob Kincaid.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop. Right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you.
I'm Bob. This is Head On, and just to let you know, we will have a guest coming on at the top of the second hour. We hope. Agnes says we will. Agnes is the rock upon which I found my assertions. We will have on Eric Bollert, noted investigative journalist. He's written for, among other organizations, Salon. We'll be talking a little bit about the minimum wage bill. He's written for Rolling Stone. He's got an excellent book out. That book is something you might actually find interesting if you'd like to get hold of it. He's the author of Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush. And he's written extensively about media and politics. We will be talking this evening about the minimum wage bill. The minimum wage bill, of course, was passed by the House today. Every single Democrat showed up for work, and every single Democrat voted in favor of that piece of legislation. There were four Republican no-shows. 82 Republicans voted for the legislation. The final vote tally 82 Republican ayes, 233 Democratic ayes, 315 116 Republican no. Let's see who hates the hates working people the most. Well, there's a name, Gallagly. The creep from Southern California that, bless his heart, our good buddy Steady worked against. He hates working people. Denny Hastert hates working people. Peter Hick Hoekstra. Where is it? Yep, there it is. John Boehner hates working people. How about that? Realizing that she is in really, really the deep and smelly, Shelley Moore, daughter of Arch, voted in favor of the minimum wage increase. Because, see, she's from West Virginia. Well, it's not hard to find South Hills on a map, and, you know, the poor people who make minimum wage might get the torches and the pitchforks out.
I'll move there.
Oh, no, they can't move there, dear. Let's see. How about I'm just looking through the list for a couple of names that might jump right out. Gingrey of Georgia. What are the odds that a state like Georgia would produce both a Gingrich and a Gingrey? Pickering. Yeah, hates working people. Dana Rohrabacher despises working people. James, I eat LSD for breakfast, Sensenbrenner, just despises Sensenbrenner. Despises working people, Sensenbrenner does. Oh, and look, there's everybody's favorite American, Tom Tancredo of Colorado. You know, this is the guy who went to a meeting, a couple of years ago in Florida and expounded the theory that we need to tell the Muslim nations that if a single nuclear device ever goes off here in God bless America, that we're going to nuke Mecca. Oh, yeah, he did. I wish I was lying to you. I really do. This is the guy who criticizes Mexicans as being illegals because they're in this country illegally, and talks about the importance of being a real American. That's Tom Tancredo. Tancredo being an old Apache word for follows buffalo with a fork. Oh, it just goes on and on. Weldon of Florida. Wilson of South Carolina. Bill Bray. Oh, you remember the Busby Bill Bray in San Diego, the guy who has no business being in the Congress of the United States. He voted against it, as did a goober named Doolittle, who apparently earns his name every daggum day. On and on. Hunter. That would be Duncan Hunter. Let's see. Where is it? Yeah, Dreyer. It's Dreyer from California that kept going out with Dorothy Bush, and the hateful old beast says, we don't know why he's not making a move on her. Oh, God, I just love them. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Bob joins us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob.
Hello, buddy.
You know what? I was reading a book today, and it's a book by a man named William Least Heatmoon. It's an older book called Blue Highways, about him driving all around America. And just today, as I was sitting in the hospital room and Dad was sleeping, I was reading the passage where he goes across North Dakota.
Yeah?
Didn't make it to Williston, but his fuel pump started going south on him. And
he got to Bismarck, I suppose.
No, he was trying to get. He was asking the guy. Well, will it make it to Great Falls?
Ah, Montana.
Right, because he was going back the other way.
Uh-huh.
And he says, Heck, Son of a Gun may not make it to Hoople. So, Son of a Gun may not make it to Hoople has now entered my vocabulary.
Oh, well, hey, you know, I was telling Dear Agnes that, you know, all them filthy, foul words that people use, I use them daily, and I use them profanely every time I think about that little squatting monkey. He's not even a man. He's a half man. He's not even a half man. He's less than a boy. He's a punk.
He's a living missing link.
Yes, he's worse than that. He's an evil twin of of the missing link. This thing is ugly, and it needs to be, what was that word, impeached. It needs to be sent to Crawford, Texas.
Well, Bob, how long is it going to take for our elected representatives to realize that that is the only check that is left to them to stop this pernicious grabbing of power?
Well, let's just keep those elected officials in mind when we speak to people. Because, Bob, I spoke to a man today, and he was a, what do you call it, one of them guys that studies military history and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And he's a proud father of a boy serving in Baghdad right now. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, I'm out there and I'm kind of angry, and I'm just kind of, I'm talking to friends and I'm kind of preaching, because I said, it's Wednesday night and it's prayer meeting night, and let's speak some truth.
Let the Spirit take you, Brother Bob.
Yes, and the truth is that you people, I mean, all the people of this earth are under a spell. What is that word? You've been just put to sleep by the media, and you keep going on, and you keep listening to this Tony Snow guy, this snow job guy in the White House. He's giving you a snow job. He's telling you, well, Bush is going to do this. Bush ain't going to do nothing. Bush ain't done nothing for the last 6 years. He ain't going to do nothing for the next two. Who among you can wake up for one moment and realize this man has done more evil on this planet than Beelzebub, or whatever his name is, that demon, that
the devil.
Yeah, the devil. Yeah, he's done so much evil since he got in office, and he said this. I have it on a DVD. He said, "Evil has found a willing partner." And he was talking about what? Himself? Because he must not have been talking about that missing person. That person we don't hear nothing about.
Oh, Osama bin Forgotten?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't hear about him, but we hear about this little wog, this fat, this faceless thing. It doesn't have a face. It's just ugly. It's the most filthy thing on this planet. Its name is George W. Bush. That's a fact. And Glenda's looking at me kind of funny right now because I shouted that I wanted everybody to understand how much I despise it. You know, Mike Malloy says, you know how much I hate these people, right?
Yeah.
You know, but he doesn't know how much I despise these people. I despise them for their lies, and you said it earlier, their lies, their lies, their lies. I despise the lying things that they do, and all the filth and the horror and the poor people of this planet are so anesthetized by their own stupidity. They do not look up and see that this thing keeps coming at them. So they got to stand up, lock and load, get ready, because if it comes, take them down. Don't even talk to them. If they come,
I know. I certainly know the feeling. You know, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago Tony Snow. You know, I'm pressed, Bob. I am pressed to come up with words to describe how I feel about Tony Snow. And this latest little gem I ran across, I don't have the audio, but I got the quote right here. This is something he said in a press conference, Tony Snow did. The president has the ability to exercise his own authority if he thinks Congress has voted the wrong way.
He doesn't have authority.
Does that? But that just makes you want to bang your head into a wall or something.
Bob.
The Tony Snow scene, just make it up as he goes along, Bob.
When will the Tony Snows of this planet, this United States, wake up and realize the president has no power except the power that we, the people, gave him to exercise on our behalf? And we, the people, every American citizen, has a responsibility to stand up and take their mantle, what George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and all the others gave us. We have a responsibility to our past to give it to our future. It is we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, a union of people. It's not a union of, you know, states or counties or nations. It's a union of people. And we said it in the beginning. What do we say in the end? Well, gee, we'll just give it to Georgie, because Georgie knows best. Well, hey, Father Knows Best was about the dumbest show that I ever saw in my life. And George Bush is no father. He can't even take care of his two little runaway, I was going to say the word, but I can't say it on air. But, you know, two brats. I'll say brats, because you can say a brat, okay? But what they really are is prostitutes, and the word for prostitute is, you know, it's in the Bible, you know, but it's not allowed to be spoken on the air. See, because...
No, you want to say whore, you can say whore. You can say harlot, you can say trollop, you can say...
Whores or harlots, they are worthless little wogs, just like their fathers. Their mother is less than that. She's a murdering B-I-T-C-H. I didn't say the word, but that's what she is. She killed her first boyfriend, so she could... You know, she slaughtered him with her car.
Yep.
She had no care for the man that, you know, kind of dumped her because she was a frumpy little, fat little, ugly little wog, just like the thing she married, that just somebody gave him the power of the mantle.
Yeah, I hear back in high school after the wreck, they called her T-Bone.
Yeah, T-Bone, yeah. Because she, that's what these people are. They are filth, Bob. They're worse. You know, Bob, I would love to just be a gentleman and look at the earth and the people of it and say, I love all and I care about you and I wish you well in health and in wealth. But I look at these people and I just wish I could just meet them on a battlefield somewhere in a combat zone, like maybe... You know, the green zone where our boys are going to die.
Yeah, but see, that's dangerous. They'll never go there.
I'd like to take them there. I'd like to take them where I've been. You know, old Sarge.
Well, see, you know, at the end of the day, Sarge, I'm sorry.
No,
Bob.
That's good.
No, see.
It works for me. It works.
But at the end of the day, that is the basic problem. You've got a war being run by people who have never heard a shot fired in anger.
Never. Hey, Bob, like my friend, and I say that very, very clearly, down there in Mississippi, that, you know, old Gunny, you know, he's been places and done things that most men should never have to. And he is not lying. I have done things that I am so ashamed of, and I did them in the name of the United States. For various presidents, beginning my first one was Johnson. My second one, after Johnson, was whom?
Nixon.
Yeah, and I crossed that border and I went into villages and then after Nixon,
yeah.
Then things, you know, and we left some of our boys just be slaughtered. And we just backed off and just left them and forgot about them, and nobody remembers this, okay? But then came whom after this Ford stuff?
Carter, of course.
Yeah, and Carter made it a lot safer. He made it, it wasn't, like, hey, we were backing down or nothing. He just made it a lot more saner, Bob. And we could just kind of relax and, we did our jobs and we went about business and we prepared to defend the nation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we worked on it. We really did. We tried to rebuild the Marine Corps after the fiasco in Vietnam. And it took us many years, and we rebuilt it to a beautiful, wonderful military machine. And then after that gentleman, that decent peanut farmer, he's called the damn peanut farmer down there. He was a smart man. He was a decent man. He was a good man. He was a true Christian. And he actually believed, and he wanted people to have a decent life. But then what did we have after Carter? We had Reagan, that actor boy that he was.
Yeah, and well, another phony military macho type.
Yeah, he was a phony one.
You know, during
World War Two. Hey, to your pop. Okay, because I know you're coming up on a kind of we're getting close on the hour, and I hope we can have the interview, and they don't kill me on the internet because I missed a bit the other night because it just kind of went bad and I couldn't get you back. But
well, that was our fault. We went down for a little bit.
Oh, I thought maybe.
And then we came, but then we came back. But yeah,
I thought maybe the paper guns came out of the woods and attacked you on Mars.
No, it's not always them. Sometimes it's us.
Oh, okay.
Well, or the packets between us and the servers or whatever. But. Yeah, that was our internet service crapping out. But Bob, I do need to roll along. Yeah. Thank you for your thoughts.
Well,
and by the way, it wasn't Great Falls. It was Grand Forks.
Yeah, well, Grand Forks.
Yeah.
Grand Forks. Oh, that's just on the other side. Grand Forks is Minnesota. That ain't even North Dakota. It's just, they call it Grand Forks, North Dakota, but there's a Grand Forks in Minnesota, and they're really just.
Yeah, and there's two Fargos.
Yeah, like two Fargos, and Fargo and Moorhead are,
But apparently Hoople is in North Dakota.
Hoople. It used to be, but it's a gone town. We got some really strange towns here. There's some that don't exist.
Well, that's what William Least Heat Moon says in this book, and this was back in 1980, and there were just places disappearing.
Oh, yeah.
We
got these little towns that used to be there that are just ghost towns. They're just dead. Ain't nobody living there, and the buildings are just foundations. There's nothing there.
Wonder how it got that way.
Well, it has.
Well, now that's for another conversation. But
yeah,
I have a sneaking suspicion Republican economic policy had something to do with it.
A great deal. But anyway, to you and yours, and to Pop, tell him I'm on his side, and I'll see him in whatever Valhalla or heaven. He's in. I'll be there side by side with him because he sounds, and I've never met the man, but I think of him as a warrior fit to stand with. And to him, I salute him. And to you, I'm proud of you, boy.
Well, thank you, Bob.
You're following in his footsteps, and that's a good thing.
Well, you have a good night, and our best to Glenda, please.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's out here giving the boy hell right now.
Okay. All right. You take care, Bob.
Get 40 or 25 to 30 or 25 below tonight.
Well, that's about how it should be, though, isn't it?
Yeah. And we've been wondering why it was 40 degrees today.
Yeah, that's just creepy.
40 degrees. That's like.
We actually got winter today, but it'll be 60 by 2 days from now.
We're used to 40 below. And it's 40 above, and we're thinking that's 80 degrees difference. And I was listening to JF today, John Fox, and
yeah.
He said, you know, people don't believe in global warming. Well, by God, come to North Dakota. We're used to real freezing weather, not 40 below. But this is 40 above? I'm out there dang near in T-shirt today.
It's T-shirt weather for a guy who lives in North Dakota.
Yeah, and it's crazy, Bob. It's really, it's not crazy. It's like I said.
No, it's not crazy. It's deliberate.
Stupid is. As
stupid
does.
Bob, yeah. You take care, brother.
You too.
Later.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye now. Let's see. What do I do? We'll catch some news, try to get a phone call in, and then we'll hopefully be talking with Eric Bullard about the minimum wage increase vote today. This is the Head-On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush addresses the nation in prime time tonight. Mr. Bush will announce his intention to deploy 21,500 U.S. troops to Iraq in support of Iraqi forces. The president will make concessions on certain White House policies regarding the war in Iraq, including his decision to limit troop levels thus far. The new White House plan includes a new spending proposal of $1 billion for Iraqi jobs and infrastructure, plus an estimated $6 billion for the surge in U.S. support troops. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is pledging to take a vote on the troop increase. In Iraq, several influential Sunni Muslim scholars criticized the new White House strategy as, quote, ineffective, predicting that many more Iraqis will die as a result. Meanwhile, in and around Baghdad today, 60 more bodies were found, apparent victims of sectarian violence. U.S. and Iraqi combined forces captured 15 Islamic militants in central Baghdad today after chasing them in and out of alleyways and conducting house-to-house searches. In Tal Afar, a northern Iraqi city, four people were killed by a suicide bomber while outside a police station. 12 were wounded in that attack. On Capitol Hill, members of the Democratic-controlled House voted to increase the federal minimum wage to $7.25 an hour. It's the first raise for America's lowest-paid workers in a decade. India could decide to walk away from a deal with the United States in which they are allowed to develop nuclear energy. Government officials in India say they welcomed the deal at first, but found out later it contained several conditions, including one in which they would not be allowed to conduct another nuclear test. Southern California fire officials continue their investigation into Monday's wildfire in Malibu that destroyed 5 homes and damaged several others. Estimated cost stands at $60 million. A new study indicates that there are an estimated 744,000 homeless people in America as of the first half of 2005. More than half were living in shelters, while another one quarter of the people in the study were chronically homeless. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez took the oath of office for his third successive term today. His inaugural speech included his plans to steer the country towards socialism. And you are listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is just ahead.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
The Thai government is being accused of polluting the world's largest wild tiger reserve through its gold mining activities. A group of non-governmental organizations also says the government has confiscated farmland and public buildings as part of a military expansion in northwestern Myanmar. Thai villagers have discovered a species of turtle that was previously believed to be extinct in the country. The discovery of the turtle on the Andaman coast is the first in two decades. The new law for tax write-offs now means donors must specifically itemize all items given to charity. IRS will no longer allow guesstimates on tax forms. The three largest newspaper publishers in the U.S., Gannett, Tribune, and McClatchy, are all discussing the creation of a nationwide ad network for online advertising. It would be separate from the proposed online ad effort between several major newspaper publishers and Yahoo. The holiday blizzard that shut down Denver International Airport cost Frontier Airlines at least $12 million, the carrier reports. Thousands of travelers were stranded. The airport shut down for 45 hours during that time. Lights Week crude trading at $54.02 a barrel at the close of Wall Street today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 26 points at 12,442. NASDAQ up 15 points at 2459. And the S&P 500 up 3 at 1414. And there's more on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
5.5 minutes after the hour, hour number two. I'm Bob, and we're going to have a conversation here in a second regarding the minimum wage bill vote today. That vote was surrounded by duplicitous, outright lying, typical Republican conservative spin and doublespeak. Just all manner of garbage was put out there about it. And of course, always leading the way anytime we're talking about making any more, making it possible for maybe helping the folks who literally carry America on their backs to get by a little better. You know, people like the Chamber of Commerce and others are always out there.
Well, if you raise the minimum wage, everybody will have to go out of business.
And that's one of the things that amazes me about the right wing. Like I said, they haven't had an original idea since Lincoln. And every time it's the same crappy argument, and we put the lie to it time after time after time. But of course, you know, we get no help from the corporate-owned media. Because they just sit there and carry the lies a little bit further, a little bit deeper, a little bit louder. And instead of even challenge it, you know, we went looking for a businessman who will go out of business if Tommy makes an extra buck an hour. So that's where we stand. But even so, a very strong vote in the House today in favor of raising the minimum wage. And journalist Eric Bollert is on the line with us now. Mr. Bollert is an author of note, having most recently authored Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush. That's an entirely separate conversation I hope we get to have. 5 years as a senior writer for Salon.com. He's written for Rolling Stone, a student of Near Eastern Studies from the University of Massachusetts, senior fellow at Media Matters for America. Mr. Bollert, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
It's entirely our pleasure. Am I correct in saying that there has been a media onslaught to make it look as though raising the minimum wage is some sort of an economic Armageddon for American small business?
Well, I think traditionally there has been. I think in terms of this bill, I think it's safe to say there's been so much attention being paid to Iraq and you know, the so-called surge. This issue has sort of flown under the radar a little bit, and I think that's to Democrats and to the country's benefit, because in the past when this issue was center stage, I think Republicans got to really, you know, determine the narrative that, you know, this is just a bill for high school kids and this is going to put small business out of business. So in a way, I think we're actually lucky we didn't have a high profile debate, because too often the press, you know, sort of falls in love or gives too much credence to these age-old, you know, talking points.
And that's all they are, though. They're talking points. Is there any truth to it? Is there any proof behind these assertions?
No, I mean, and there's a great, you know, Oregon a few years ago raised its minimum wage. You know, they didn't wait around for the federal government. I mean, they realized, you know, I mean, if Republicans are in charge of Congress, there's literally no way the minimum wage is ever going to be raised. Oregon did it themselves. And lo and behold, I mean, even the Wall Street Journal noted that Oregon's economic growth completely obliterated this notion that if you raise the minimum wage, it's going to have severe economic hardship. Oregon's economy did very well with a $7.15 minimum wage. So that, I mean, you know, examples don't get much clearer than that. I mean, everyone said you raise the minimum wage, the economy's going to go down the tube. You know, Oregon did it, and in fact, the opposite happened. They got a nice bump. I mean, you could argue different states would have different economies, and so Oregon isn't the perfect example. You know, it's not agricultural based, for instance. But look, they did it, and the world didn't fall apart. In fact, the economy did really well.
Well, and it seems to me that it only makes sense, because if you give somebody who's making $5 an hour a $2 raise, that's two more bucks to buy that Xbox, or two more bucks to maybe, you know, splurge and go for a better grade of television. That's what the working class tends to spend its money on, isn't it? I mean, it goes back into the economy.
And also, what they've studies have found that it increases productivity. I mean, again, the small business concern, and, you know, on the face of it, there is, you know, it seems legitimate. You know, if you're a small business person and you're paying a lot of low wages, if you've suddenly got to pay more wages, that's more money out of your pocket. But studies have shown that when you increase the wages, you increase productivity. You're going to get a better worker. You're going to get someone who doesn't waste time and resources. So, I mean, it's not all just about, you know, this is how much we're going to pay. This is how much money goes out of our coffers. You also will have to look at the efficiencies and productivity. And again, there's evidence to show that if you pay people more, they work better, they work more efficiently, they stay longer. You're not constantly, you know, small business people, I mean, what are they doing? They're constantly trying to fill people to work for them, because if you're paying people $5 an hour, someone comes for 6 weeks, someone comes for 3 months, I mean, they're not going to have a stable workforce.
Well, there's inherent cost in that constant active retraining.
I mean, it's a constant drain in your time trying to find people, putting in the ads, doing the interviews. You train someone, you know, again, the training might only take a day or two. I mean, if you're, you know, fast food business. But if you're constantly doing that, if that's all you're doing, because no one will stick around because all you're paying is $5.18 an hour, of course that's going to hurt your productivity and efficiency. And the other thing is, you know, This is, you know, conservatives like almost like to laugh it off as, well, this is just for, you know, this is a bill for high school kids. You know, I guess if you're, you know, if your household income is $85,000 and above, and all you do, all you know is sort of suburban lifestyle that maybe a lot of Republicans do, they think the only people who make minimum wage are their 18-year-old kids. That's not true. I mean, it's an enormous swath of this economy where people are making very little money. So that's really, to me, I find that most offensive, that why are we going to raise the minimum wage? My kid doesn't need a raise. Well, it's not about your kid. It's about a lot of working, you know, single moms and dads and other people who can't afford to live on $5 an hour anymore.
Well, this program originates in West Virginia. There are a lot of people who are running families on that minimum wage.
Absolutely.
And
again, I just find that so offensive and so elitist. You know, oh, my kid doesn't need a raise. Well, you know, good. This isn't for your kid, you know. This isn't for the kids who, you know, are trying to save them money to buy a car for, you know, their four-year college. It's for working folks.
Well, exactly, because a press release that I got from my congressman, Nick Rahal, pointed out today that the minimum wage, assuming a 40-hour work week, is $10,000 a year, and that's $6,000 below the poverty line for a family of three.
You are right in the middle of the poverty range, if you're working minimum wage. And let's face it, I mean, people in West Virginia know, if you're working minimum wage, you're not working 40 hours. You probably got two and a half jobs. I mean, no one can live on $10,000.
No, a family of one can't live on $10,000.
So the idea that even someone has a minimum wage job and works 40 hours a week, everyone knows that's just your beginning of your work week. How many other jobs does that woman or that man have?
Well, so. I remember when George Bush looked at a woman who was having to work three jobs and told her that working three jobs was uniquely American. You know, and that was almost as offensive to me, Eric, as when they showed the video of him crawling around under the coffee table looking for weapons of mass destruction.
Right, right.
There's a Republican disconnect, a conservative disconnect out there with the everyday lives of people as they lead them in this country.
Well, yeah, and as we found out, there's a disconnect with their everyday lives with Iraqis as well. I mean, they've completely bungled that. But yeah, it's a very elitist attitude, uniquely American. I mean, to think that people have to, you know, people have to work, you know, 55, 65, you know, hours a week just so, and don't see their kids because, you know, again, if it's a single mom, you know, to suggest that's a good thing or, you know, builds character, I mean, give me a break.
Well, between the conservatives and the media, Eric, there has been, they have been incredibly successful at almost making America completely forget. Well, it's like that old line from Camelot that once there was a spot for happy ever aftering. That once upon a time there was an America, and the last time it existed was the Carter administration, they should be reminded, when the single wage earner household was in fact the norm.
Yeah.
We hear a lot from the right wingers, people like Limbaugh and so forth, about class warfare. Well, there is a class war, and
yeah,
they're
right.
And they're winning.
Yeah, and we lost it. I mean, there was a war, and most of Americans lost it. You know, if you look at the tax returns and the data, there was a class war, and the upper class won. And so, yeah, it would be nice to bring back more of an even ground. And, you know, and this issue that the minimum wage, I mean, if you listen to Rush Limbaugh and conservatives, I mean, it's even a dirty word. I mean, to them, it's sort of the equivalent of socialism and things like that. I mean, it's been an American tradition for decades, and it's done good things. And more importantly, from, you know, our perspective at Media Matters, we want to see, you know, just an honest debate about the topic and not sort of relying on these old chestnuts about, you know, it's going to kill the economy and this is just for kids.
Well, it never has killed the economy. What makes it think it's going to kill? Makes them think it's going to kill it now?
Well, because you know they staff the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute, and they pay people a lot of money to sit around and come up with these papers because the Chamber of Commerce is adamantly opposed to it. I mean, that's the larger picture with this. You know, we're just talking about the minimum wage debate and that narrative, and the larger problem in America in terms of progressive and Democrats is, you know, they are up against this massive infrastructure that Republicans have created in terms of, you know, not just think tanks, but dominating the media discussion. And they spend so much money on all of the things. I mean, the minimum wage debate is just one tiny fraction. But
I remember they spent the gross domestic product of several small countries fighting any attempt to provide health care coverage to every American in the...
even further massive media consolidation that the Republican FCC wanted to institute. It was almost a done deal. I mean, Michael Powell was the head of the FCC, and he was going to get it done. But yeah, 2003 and 2004, this huge grassroots coalition was able, with some help from a couple of Republicans, notably Trent Lott and a couple others, were able to turn it back. I think that was incredibly important because even with the consolidation we saw from 96 to 2000, I think was incredibly harmful to the country, and the Republicans wanted to accelerate it even more, and I think that would have been just really disastrous, not only for progressives, but for the country itself.
Well, and I think that's the bottom line issue where all of this is concerned. We're talking about the good of the republic.
Yeah.
And we talk about things on this program and certainly on other liberal programs that you simply cannot get commentary or discussion about in other fora. This quote that has come out, and Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks noticed it. This quote from Tony Snow that should, it's scream it from the rooftops kind of stuff. Snow said, quote, "The president has the ability to exercise his own authority if he thinks Congress has voted the wrong way." That should be like ice water in people's veins for anybody who pays attention. But you know, how many places in the mainstream media, Eric, did that quote show up?
Oh, almost none. I mean, if you just preview the speech tonight, I mean, I cannot remember the time a sitting president was going to announce an initiative that was so massively not only unpopular, but you know, sort of, if you look at the polls, adamantly opposed. And the fact that it's sending more troops to a war, I mean, it's not like, you know, Social Security initiative. I mean, this is the real deal. I mean, people are going to get killed. And the coverage is sort of, oh, you know, he's going to ask for more troops, and some people are opposed, and this is very interesting. I mean, this is just unprecedented that, and you know, Bush is going against the American people. He's going against his own generals. He's going against everything he had said for 2 years. And it seems very quiet, and not from the public, but from the press. And it'll be interesting to see the coverage tonight. But I watched some of the nightly news shows, and it was just sort of, well, Bush is in a corner, and he's going to give the speech, but nothing particularly dramatic. Like, this is almost unprecedented, you know, in modern American history, that he was going to go against the wishes of nearly every major constituency to send more kids to die in Iraq. I mean, it's extraordinary, but I don't get a sense
jaw-dropping
from the press at all.
Right, and the issue has been changed from should we end the war or should we continue the war to should we keep the troops at where they are or send more. I mean, the framing.
Yeah, right.
Well, Eric Bollert, thank you very kindly for joining us. I probably kept you longer than you were supposed to be on, but it's been a wonderful conversation. I hope we can talk again soon.
Sure, I'd like that.
All right, take care, and again, good luck with the book.
Okay, thanks, then.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Eric Bollert, Senior Fellow at Media Matters for America. Again, the book, the name of the book is... there it is. The name of the book is Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush. And just, it's almost like an understatement. There's a graphic that Bart Kopp runs from time to time that shows George Bush in a wingback chair by the hearthside fire, surrounded by a bunch of dogs that all have the names of various media outlets on it. Or another of him holding a cute little terrier with a fedora that says press. And it couldn't get any more true, could it? So it's Lapdogs, How the Press Rolled Over for Bush by Eric Bollert. It was published by Free Press last year. It is a piece-by-piece taking apart of many of the things that are wrong with mainstream media today. if you follow these issues, and I know many of you do, I think you'll want that on your bookshelf. 26 minutes before the hour, and I think we'll take a break if Agnes is up for that. We will be back. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they plant a tree at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves that he's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
one before the hour as we pass the halfway point for tonight's program. I'm Bob Kincaid. Quick, quick, who did it? No cheating, Billy. Brewer and Shipley. And I can do that without the internets. Brewer and Shipley. One took over the line. Sweet Jesus. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Luke joins us from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm hopeful, but you know how that dies the quick death.
Yeah, they just take it. Sometimes they just take hope out of you. Never mind keep hope alive, and never mind the place called hope. Hope is something to be taken out behind the building and killed.
I know. Okay, I got an important question for you for tonight for the thing. All right, I've got my bottle of wine. Now, what word should I use for the drinking contest? Surge, victory. I'm trying to figure out what, or just wait for
it. The headline from CNN, Luke, is Bush to blame failure to secure Baghdad on lack of troops. I would drink on the word secure.
Secure. Okay. I'm just trying to figure out which one I figure is good. I thought originally surge, but I think that's a little too easy.
Yeah, I think that word's been dirtied up enough it may not even show up in the speech.
And 10-1, he will not even use the word victory.
No.
You know, last year they were talking about, you know, he just kept on talking again and again about victory. It's like, No,
we're done with victory.
I know.
Victory died shortly after democracy in Iraq died. I would look for the word secure, and I would maybe look for the word, here's a phrase for you. Aggressive plan.
Ah. I wonder if we'll go back to way forward.
You will hear way forward. But this just astonishes me. This headline, Bush to blame failure to secure Baghdad on lack of troops.
Well, I'm sure we'll hear lack of resolve.
Something
along those lines. Now, the Democrats have a lack of resolve on this.
Well, the direct quote from the leaked text of the speech is, there are not enough Iraqi and American troops to secure neighborhoods. Well, it sounds to me like he wants beat cops, not soldiers armed to the teeth.
Well, it's one of those things, you know.
But whose fault is it, Luke? For the love of God, whose fault is it?
Who's been fighting for 3 years? I mean, when we went in, people were saying, you don't have enough people. Rumsfeld's trying to do this with the absolute minimum. And it's like, no.
Who told them at the outset of the war, if you even hope to accomplish this, it's going to take a half a million pairs of boots on the ground?
What was the Shinseki? It was either 400,000 or 500,000.
Shinseki, yeah, half a million troops.
And I think he said 400 was like the minimum.
And they canned him for it. They cashiered him.
Get out of here. What are you doing?
Just like Abizaid and Casey, who are, you know, I'm no great fans of theirs.
No.
But
they've seen the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And, you know, one of them was due to retire in June.
Mm-hmm. Move that up a little.
Congratulations. Bank error in your favor.
Okay, some other things. Let's get into it.
All right.
Last night, your thing on ABC. You heard anything back on any of that?
Spocko is back up.
Yay!
Spockosbrain.com is back up.
But I tell you one thing, we got to start writing like GMA. And
mm-hmm.
Tell them, congratulations. As long as you got him on the air, I won't be. It's like, I'll go over and watch Matt and Meredith. Thank you.
Well, you know, and the thing is that, you know, what we can put in that letter is, you know, we're not going to watch anymore, and we're going to communicate with your sponsors. And by the way, why don't you send a letter to Enid, Kreplock or whatever her name?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, send a letter to her so she can send a nasty letter to me about it.
Well, my question is, we should also send her that. Okay, and if you're going to do this, does that mean you're going to be going after people like Limbaugh, because he uses clips?
Well, sure he does.
Are we going to be going after him?
And well, me?
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, Media Matters for America. But the thing is, Media Matters for America does have some money behind them, and they've got their own mean lawyer,
yep.
who will pick up the dictaphone and write a screw you, Graham, right back to the likes of Enid.
I know. Oh, another thing on the media. This past weekend, did you notice how all of a sudden the media just did not want to talk about the Keith Ellison story? Apparently, when he got the upper hand on Mr. Good.
Yeah, with the Jefferson Quran.
Yeah, and it's like all of a sudden it's like I was turned on Sunday. And I thought, okay, we'll hear somebody mention something. I did not hear it mentioned on any of the shows.
Crickets.
Yeah. So, I tell you. Hey, the question, we're hearing this thing that he's going to talk tonight about $1 billion for jobs and all this in Iraq.
Oh, I know.
What happened to that $18 billion that they set aside at the beginning of all this?
Well, what happened to the $9 billion that Paul Bremer lost in the sofa?
I know. But you know what I mean? Originally, I think it was either like $16 or $18 billion was in the original plan for rebuilding Iraq.
Well, they did. They spent it, and they rebuilt it, and then they got blown up again.
Oh, God, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, but what's so funny in all of that billion is that, and it's, of course, a story that is covered almost not at all, is the fact that one of the things that the puppet government in Baghdad has done is to crack down on any form of trade unionism there. I mean, yeah, Shiite, Sunni, you know, people wind up in the streets dead for being Shiites and Sunnis. Well, it's very, very underreported that if you have some notion that you're going to form some sort of a trade union in Iraq, you get dead even faster.
Well, you know, and it's like, what would have happened if instead of bringing in Halliburton and KBR and all this stuff, to begin with, they'd have started hiring Iraqi people to build stuff. You know, from the get-go. I mean, I know there's some things that, you know, you have to have some infrastructure, but a lot of this stuff, rebuilding, they should have been hiring the local people.
Well, you would think so. At one point, the single greatest employer in Iraq, I remember, was a concrete forms manufacturer who built those Jersey wall blast barrier things. They employed more than anybody else in the country. And, you know, Iraq is... It's testament, Luke. I'm glad you brought this up. It's testament to what we have done to that country.
I know.
That, you know, it's nothing to read a story where a fellow says, my driver that day was Ahmed Nadul. Ahmed, prior to the destruction of the Saddam Hussein regime, had been an emergency room surgeon at Baghdad General. He drives a cab now. I mean, those stories are all over the place. You know, he was an engineer at blah, 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 blah. He was our translator.
Okay. Got two other things real quick. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'll try to eat up as much time, as much stories as I can.
Go right ahead.
They're talking about, you know, said one of the things we're trying to do is get Maliki now to turn essentially on Sadr. Sadr's just going to do Saddam. He'll go into hiding for 6 months.
Sadr will have Maliki killed.
If not, you know, I mean, if they really go after Sadr, Sadr will just disappear. You know, he'll say, find me if you can. Let's see how long you all can keep it up.
Well, and that's the, you know, at the, oh, God, it drives me nuts, Luke, because this business, with, like I said at the top of the program, with the he's going to say that he's going to send 22,000, and he's going to send 11,000 now and 11,000 if the Iraqis get their crap together. Now, either we need... 22.
If they ain't got together by now, they ain't going to get it together.
Well, there's that, but either we need 22,000 troops in Baghdad or we don't.
Yeah.
If we only need 11,000, then 11,000 is what the generals should say they need.
And if you're saying just half of what they need, it's like, are you going to give them bullets for the gun while you're at it?
Right. This is crazy. There's no thought behind this. I know that we've been presented pictures, Luke, of dear leader, you know, huddled up with his closest advisors plotting the new way forward.
I think it's CGI. I think they've actually just painted him in.
Well, Jesus, I think they've been playing Parcheesi.
I know.
Or, you know, I don't know. That takes brains.
I was gonna say.
Dear leader, yeah. Sorry.
Pick up.
Aggravation.
Okay, one more.
Go.
Sorry, let's get out of the way. I just sent you the email. NBC's pushing on this thing about the trophy system again. Apparently they found some paperwork where they're showing how the some people in the Army were trying to sabotage it from being used. The Israeli system.
Yeah, the anti-aircraft
system.
Anti-RPG
system.
Yeah.
And apparently I saw the thing tonight with Miss Myers, and but I sent you the link to it, where apparently they're going after this, and I'm sitting there going, please take this. Somebody send this to Mr. Waxman. He will love something like this. You know, he will follow it like a bloodhound. You know, just let him loose on it. Let him have fun with that.
Well, I hope somebody does. This is just disturbing stuff.
Okay. One totally off-topic thing.
Okay, go, man.
Okay. We have to put the black armband on. You saw somebody, a very beautiful lady, passed away today.
Yvonne DiCarlo, I know.
I remember when I was a kid, the first time I ever saw her, I thought she was one of the most beautiful women I'd ever seen.
I thought she was pretty when she was, I thought she was still pretty when she was doing the Munsters.
But you know what I mean? When I used to see some of her old films from the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And 60, to me, I think she was probably one of the most beautiful women I ever saw. That's just a child's recollection, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
She was a Hollywood beauty. And a talented actress at that. I mean, I know that some may think I've completely lost my mind, but the ability of Al Lewis, Yvonne DiCarlo, Butch Patrick, and God knows, Fred Gwynne.
Oh, gosh.
To take that ridiculous premise.
And go with it and have fun with it.
Well, they went with it, they had fun with it, and they did it believably.
Yeah.
You know, by the... You think of Yvonne DiCarlo, and you think of her in that shroud, you know, with the streak in the hair, and she was just so believable because they took the writers of that show took the concept of the bumbling father sitcom
and turned it inside out
and kept the characters there. Yvonne DiCarlo was. I don't know, Barbara Billingsley in a shroud. She really was. And I mean, is Al Lewis as grandpa on that program, is he anything but the absolute progenitor of the character that would go on to be played to such genius by Jerry Stiller or Peter Boyle?
Because that's who I thought of when I thought of it. I'm sitting there going, he just enjoyed that, you could tell. Especially, you know, when you see him on interviews, you can tell he just had a fun time doing it.
So if you believe in any kind of an afterlife, there's got to be a happy reunion going on right now between Fred Gwynne and Yvonne DiCarlo.
I bet they're just having a good time, sitting back just watching.
Yeah. My father, the big TV guy, used to just cackle. There was one particular scene where Fred Gwynne, as Herman, took a strike-anywhere match and reached onto the back of his jeans and dragged it down the fabric of those pants and caught his entire pair of pants on fire. And then and he's standing there burning his fingers at the same time, and in that deadpan sweet little voice of his, "Funny, that never happens to John Wayne." Just perfect. Oh, Herman, you know, that long suffering. What a brilliant actress she was.
And like I say, to take something that farcical and make it just so believable.
Yeah, well,
I know what you mean. But like I say, I guess I'm going to sit tonight and I guess I'll watch Overman because I think him and Matthews are doing the coverage of it.
Well, you know, and at some point, now that MSNBC is pairing him up with Chris Matthews, I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for the day when Overman just reaches over and, you know, takes Matthews by the back of the head and just whack into the desk.
What are you thinking?
Yeah. How you feeling? Yeah. You like baseball? I used to do sports. I like baseball. Whack.
you talked about the other day. How did your dad enjoy the game?
We watched it a little bit. He loved the Gator Bowl, He was kind of around for the national championship the other night, and of course he was rooting for Florida because he and I comprised a part of that confraternity of people who believed that OSU was overhyped, overrated.
Yeah.
And you know.
Well, where I'm from, I could say I pulled for the SEC team not to lose. That's about as far as I could go. You know.
Yeah, but you know, I think the big winner out of that game was Chris Leak.
Oh God! Yeah.
And frankly, there was a lot of vindication in that game for Ron Zook.
Well, yeah, because a friend of mine said today that Meyer should just look at the camera and said, "I want to thank Ron Zook for leaving me good players."
Yeah, exactly. Now, Urban Meyer did take Rich Rodriguez's spread offense and turn it into something down there, but a lot of that has to end with Chris Leak, because you know all the you know, the Gator Nation, as it were screaming for Tim Tebow to be the starter and the one and only.
We're just waiting next year to see if Tebow can handle it all by itself.
Well, and that's the thing. I don't think Florida would have been in that game the other night had Tim Tebow taken the team the entire distance, because they would have lost to more than just Auburn.
Yeah.
But frankly, you know, the people I feel sorry for out of this is Boise State, because.
I do, but at the same time, they're going to have to come up with something, because if you don't, you're going to have teams scheduling 10, you know, the 10 lowest teams in the Division I.
Yeah, but by the same token, Boise State played two top 10 teams.
Oh, I know.
And whipped them. They can't help the conference that they play in any more than, you know, than Ohio State can help the fact that they play in the Big Ten. The WAC and the Big Ten are just jelly soft. It proves itself. I don't know. I think if I was Boise State, I'd have some high-paid, really mean lawyer filing a Sherman antitrust suit against the bowl championship series.
Well, please, I want him to just because of the fact to get him watching the submarine Notre Dame.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Speaking of overrated.
Yeah, it's like say, I think the top quarterback is going to be the kid from LSU.
I think so too, Jamarcus Russell. There's a lot of teaching has to go on for him to be a pro quarterback.
Got the physical and the skills.
6'6" and 240. You know, if you draft him and he doesn't work out, you've got a guard.
We were sitting there going,
"They're a tight end from hell."
What a few years ago when they had, I can't think what his name was. Remember the Kentucky quarterback a couple of years ago? It was like about 300 pounds. It's like we sent our guys in there. We hit him. We couldn't knock him down.
Exactly.
Like, bulletproof quarterback. Damn, it's a punt. But now,
he's you know what Jamarcus Russell is? He's a 6'6", 240-pound version of Antoine Randall Hill.
Oh God.
I think the Steelers ought to pick him up myself. You know, because the Steelers lost Antoine Randall L this year, and frankly, I think it did unprecedented damage to their offense.
I think what you ought to do is get him. If you don't use him as a quarterback, shoot, I'd use him as a running back, and every once in a while, just here, toss it.
Well, you know, put him up at guard and put him up at tackle and call a tackle eligible.
No, they won't let you run the fumble rooski anymore.
No, but you can run a tackle eligible.
True.
You know, that's where the ref can, number 76 is eligible, number 76 is eligible. And when the ref does that, the entire defense has to go, oh, hell.
Shift all over to the side.
Right. Exactly.
I tell you what, though, I got to give Boise State credit. I don't think I've ever seen the Statue of Liberty play run better.
Oh, that was just genius. It was absolutely
going,
beautiful.
Quick kick.
The oldest chestnut in football this side of the flying wedge. And that genius Bob Stoops got completely suckered by it. And they have run it all year long and didn't see it coming. Bob Stoops is on my overrated list too.
No, but like I say, I think tonight the interesting thing will be what he does talk about and what he doesn't talk about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because what
he won't talk about is the fact that he says, you know, well, we've had problems and things have not been successful in Iraq. What he won't talk about is why that is. I mean, this is his war. It's not like he inherited it from some. You know, it's not like Nixon getting Vietnam from Johnson.
The one thing I heard today that it blew me away was the thing from the Kennedy speech where he was sitting there reading all off this stuff and he talked out there and he said, that was not George Bush's words. Those are Lyndon Johnson's words. Where he was talking about Johnson, talking about sending more troops and all this.
Yeah.
And it was just so eerie because, I mean, you could have just changed the names. And it would have been the same damn speech. You know, where he was talking about having to send more troops to protect America. And you're just sitting there going, it's the same thing. It's just like, George, we know you missed class. Of course, you missed it on this one, too, didn't you? We're going to repeat this. My God. So... well, I'll tell you what. I see it's almost top of the hour, but let me let you get to some news. I'll get back, watch a little bit of Mr. Oberman, and we'll talk in a couple of days. I'll talk to you Friday.
All right.
All right, and then you take her. Hey, are you going to be on Monday night?
Yeah, I imagine so.
Okay.
All things being equal, I will be.
Well, that's okay. I didn't know with the holiday if you were or not.
No, we try to mark that.
I understand.
We'll probably do what we did last year and run excerpts from his Riverside Martin Luther King's Riverside Church speech because
CNN's run something on some of his papers, I think.
Oh yeah, that's where Solenoid O'Brien found the edits on his speeches.
And they're gonna go, oh, by the way, this wasn't the first time at the mall. It's like, no, it wasn't. It was at the church.
Exactly.
But it's a damn good speech, so we used it again.
Well, yeah, exactly. Thanks, Luke.
All right, see y'all.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Oh, and by the way, as we prepare for the speech. Our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony, has already weighed in on his thoughts for tonight's speech on the new way forward, titled On the Airwaves, what will the president say tonight? A, we are sending 20,000 more troops to Iraq so they will be safely out of the crossfire between Rosie O'Donnell and Donald Trump. B, nothing because Nancy Pelosi keeps swatting him when he mispronounces a word. Or C, the speech is canceled because the public would really rather hear Larry King's tribute to Yvonne DiCarlo. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush will give a primetime speech tonight to announce he will send 21,500 more troops to Iraq. He says increasing the troop level now will help break the back of the insurgency and will hasten the return of U.S. troops. Mr. Bush will also admit that he made a mistake by not sending in more troops and resources sooner. In Iraq today, Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki told Shiite militiamen to either give up their arms now or face an all-out assault by U.S. and Iraqi troops. On Capitol Hill today, the House voted to raise the federal minimum wage from $5.15 to $7.25 an hour over the next 26 months. The bill now heads to the Senate, where its passage is not certain. Next, lawmakers will revisit the stem cell controversy. At issue is a bill that would allow federal money to be spent on stem cell research. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has banned smoking effective immediately in the Speaker's lobby off the House floor. However, lawmakers may still smoke in their own offices. In Baghdad today, U.S. and Iraqi troops returned to the site of yesterday's 10-hour gun battle with Sunni insurgents. Today, troops arrested 15 suspected militants and seized bomb-making materials, guns, and ammunition. The U.S. military reports that two more American soldiers died yesterday from their injuries in fighting in the Anbar province. In Somalia, an official says that a senior al-Qaeda suspect was killed in a recent U.S. airstrike. The suspect was wanted for the bombings of American embassies in East Africa in 1998. A Somali official and a lawmaker both say the U.S. continued its attacks today, but U.S. officials deny that. The European Union, African Union, and United Nations are all criticizing the strikes. In the southern Philippines today, at least 6 people were killed and 27 others wounded in a string of bombings. 2 young boys, ages 8 and 12, are among the dead. Officials suspect Muslim militants, who they say may have coordinated the bombings, to disrupt this weekend's economic summits. In Venezuela, President Hugo Chavez was sworn in today for his third 6-year term. He vowed to continue his country's transformation into a socialist state. Earlier this week, he announced plans to nationalize the country's power and telecommunications industries. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are coming up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A new government report says that Americans spent nearly $2 trillion on health care in 2005, a nearly 7% increase from the year before. Hospital care accounted for more than 31% of those costs. The European Union has revealed a new energy policy for the continent. Today, member states agreed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by at least 20% over the next dozen years. An advocacy group for the IRS says the agency should stop using private agencies to collect delinquent taxes. The group told Congress that IRS collectors are better trained and more efficient. U.S. Airways is not giving up on its bid for Delta Airlines. The air carrier raised its offer for the bankrupt airline by nearly 20% to $10.4 billion. The Commerce Department reports that the U.S. trade deficit narrowed last month for the third month in a row. In November, American manufacturers sold more cars, airplanes, and jewelry to foreign countries, and Americans bought fewer products from China. Bolivian President Evo Morales has announced plans to nationalize the country's mining industry. The move is aimed at gaining a bigger share of export revenues for the government. Light sweet crude is trading at $53.55 on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 26 points at 12,442, NASDAQ up 15, S&P 500 up 3. You can hear more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
You know, if you've never been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, you're missing something that you should not deprive yourself of. The things that go on in there. I'm just going to... There was speculation as to Condoleezza Rice's underwear, okay? That's all I'm going to say. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be right for the rest of the night.
Are you ever right?
That's right, Agnes. If I spoke in a forest and there was and you weren't there to hear me, would I still be wrong? Let's go back to the phone. Spike joins us from Easton, PA. Hey,
well,
Spike.
Gonzo greetings, but I wasn't paying attention to that conversation, and thanks for making me feel more ill tonight now.
Well, hey, brother, misery loves company.
The best thing that happened to me is I was spacing out for a few minutes there on hold, not looking at the
screen. It's like that great line from the movie Mate One. All we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it.
Hey, real quick, you mentioned Fred Gwynne and Al Lewis before.
Yeah.
Those guys were great actors. I mean, my cousin Vinny is great because of Fred Gwynne as an Alabama judge.
These two what, counselor?
And
Utes.
And best of all, the other great role that Al Lewis had was co-starring with Fred Gwynne on Car 54 back in the day.
Absolutely.
Which was a real great show. Those two, they were a great combination, even though they weren't directly a combination on Car 54. And old school actors did that a lot, where they did a lot of things together over and over.
Well, you find somebody that you can work with and work well with. John Wayne movie got mentioned by me earlier in the program. In all of John Wayne's films, you always see a screen credit for Yakima Canutt. As long as John Wayne had work, Yakima Canutt had work.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like Ron Howard, and Clint Howard always has a role in a movie.
Yeah.
You do get some of those.
God, I saw the Star Trek episode that had Clint Howard in it not too long back, you know, where the fierce alien, the really scary-looking alien keeps popping on screen, and it turns out it's Clint Howard on board a spaceship all by himself.
But he's just a naturally scary. Well, he's the Smog Strangler on Seinfeld.
True.
That might be his best role of all time. And I saw a crazy movie once late at night on cable with him, and he was like some psychotic ice cream man. It's no joke, a Clint Howard. And he would like cut up the bodies and make ice cream out of it. It was the strangest movie role I ever saw, and it was Clint Howard's role. I was just like, well, I guess you gotta pick someone to play someone that messed up. He looked like it.
True enough.
What's that?
I said true enough. Clint Howard just—he's
a scary looking guy.
He's a scary looking little dude. You know, Opie got all the cute.
Yeah, well, my parents always referred to him as Opie's ugly brother. So, but
your parents are hard people.
Oh yeah. Oh, well, they're from New York originally. feisty crowd there in the Poconos. But
mellowed out and came to Easton. Whoa!
Yeah, came to the hometown of a former heavyweight champion and someone who the one that some muffler company bowl for Boston College. That kicker, he's actually from Easton.
Oh, is he really? Yeah, I forget his name. Yeah.
Sid Vicious, they all call him up there. Yeah, he's won 2 games now this year, like right at the end in overtime or whatever.
And he's from Easton?
Yeah, he didn't play football here, though. He played soccer and baseball.
Well, they said that he'd never played football a day in his life when he walked on at BC.
Yeah, he played soccer, though, so he knew how to kick a ball. So I guess they were still hard-pressed for kickers. He worked out the best. Kind of funny. Yeah.
Well, kickers kept costing them football games, so, you know.
Yeah, well, go figure. They wised up and got a soccer player to do it, which is basically, I think, what all the top guys in the NFL are. But, and speaking of which, yeah, that Boise game, oh, I don't think I've talked to you since then.
Did that just blow you away?
Oh, that was great. I didn't have to go into work till like, late the next day, so I could stay up and watch it, and someone I know, he does a weekly sports show. He's from Boise originally, so he had been talking about it, which kind of got me in the mood to watch it. And, oh, my God, yeah, that was thank God I watched that, because if I would have watched the national game, I would have been very disappointed, especially considering how many people at the time were saying Florida doesn't belong there. They played a 1-2-A team. They don't even belong there. It should be Michigan. And apparently, it should have been Florida. You know, so, but, yeah, a playoff system. Oh, imagine a playoff system with Florida and Boise, Matt.
Well, you know, and I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see, a deal made where somebody provides stadium space and they play and all the money goes to charity.
Yeah. Oh, well.
In other words, ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, forget charity. Oh, my God, these prize packs. You know how many of these players got like iPods and, you know.
Oh, I know. Well, you know, each and each school got $17 million. I got to I was trying to think in terms of economics of scale, Spike. That means in order to pay Nick Saban, the University of Alabama has to go to the national championship game at least 3 times in 8 years.
Yeah, well,
just to cover what they've laid out to Nick.
Well, they can have Nick Saban. I'm a Dolphins fan.
Yeah, well, that's why I brought it up. I know you are.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, when the Eagles make it to the next round of the playoffs, you know.
Yeah, well, I think the whole thing with Miami is plain and simple is that people think filling Dan Marino's shoes are. Just imagine filling Don Shula's shoes.
Oh.
That's even much.
Yeah,
well,
role. You know, Dolphins fan that you are, I hear that Mike Shula is looking for a job.
Well, he would probably get it, but he'd probably be just like W. Bush after H.W. Bush.
Well, and Wayne, obviously Wayne Huizenga wanted Pete Carroll, but why Pete Carroll would leave USC?
Well, real quick with that, a great point I heard today was Pete Carroll said he's not interested, and somebody who has another show had made a point. I thought, as a Dolphins fan, they'll listen to it. I think it's a great point, is of course he's interested. That would be like if you're married and Pam Anderson says, hey, you want to go out to lunch, and you're like, tell you, like, oh, I'm going out to lunch with Pam Anderson. I know everybody, but, you know, it's Pam Anderson. I got to go. That, like, that's essentially what his logic was for talking about, you know, Huizenga. So I wish Buddy Ryan could come out of retirement and be a coach. I kind of like that kind of spirit of coaching, as politically incorrect and mean as it is. That's, you want to talk old school.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the coach of the Jets. He was the defensive coordinator for the Jets team that Namath won the Super Bowl with.
And that's true.
He was the defensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears that time. And although his infamy lies more so in his later years from Philadelphia on, especially the bounties he put on other guys and stuff. I mean, he was dirty football.
Well, I think that the Dolphins are going to take a while to recover.
Yeah.
The Ricky Williams thing.
And he'll probably be back, first of all. Well, best of all, really.
Well,
when he is there, he plays well. I mean, that's
if they would just let NFL players smoke dope, Ricky Williams would probably be among the premier running backs in the league.
Yeah, the whole reason they had that great second half last season was he was there. He was a big part of that. You know, it's amazing. People just don't know. It's a very conservative world, football. They don't get a guy who does that and does yoga. And, you know, is baseball, he'd fit in much better with a personality like that than in football.
Yeah, and you know what? He could probably, if he could learn to hit a curve.
Yeah, he could play in the American League, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's what did Michael Jordan in. All the stuff he could do on a basketball court, but he could not hit a curveball in minor league baseball.
But the best thing that happened for him was that the Chicago White Sox were so bad, it got to the point they could bring him up just to sell tickets to their game. Kind of like why Barry Bonds got a big contract from the Giants, you know? In Chicago, Jordan would attract a big crowd being a bad baseball player, and in San Francisco, Bonds does it. But, you know, best of all, we've been rambling about sports for how long now? I didn't even call that.
No, you didn't at all.
But I have a suspicion Hugo Chavez is going to be brought up a lot more recently and perhaps tonight, because there was a big thing about him in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, so I kind of see this as the right talk. And I found some very interesting points about their quote, he's turning the whole country socialist or he's turning the whole country communist, depending on who's saying it. He's going to nationalize some utilities again. And this is what's kind of ironic. They belong to Venezuela, and they basically outsource them.
Well, and the banking industry, too, I think, is... And of course, the way it's covered in the media, I even heard it on QNN, another step toward socialism.
Yeah, and you know, the banking institution, I have to say, to be honest with you, I don't think the one in our country is too good. They kind of get away with a lot of things. Many of them have created policies where they operate basically as a loan shark, except they don't, you know, Mr. Gazzo doesn't have Rocky break you dump. You know, yeah, that's essentially, you know, I learned that, you know, some time ago at Wachovia.
Well, you know, payday lenders are big in some states, and frankly, I mean, they charge rates that would make a loan shark blush.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. These are the legal guys, and they seem to be just as deviant as the illegal crime syndicates out there. The mob.
Well, and again, it's another product spike of the mass urge toward deregulation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we deregulated the banking industry. Oof. You know,
the deregulation of energy. I mean, that's, no one's electric bills have ever gotten cheaper out of that deal. And Enron is a direct result of that. And the same lobbyist that did it there did it here in Pennsylvania, only we never had an Enron incident here.
Well, and that's why, if you go in to pay your car insurance premium, there's a sign in the Allstate or the Snake Farm office, ask me about investing in the stock market. Yeah, gonna do that. Gonna buy stocks from an insurance broker. On top of it.
But, hey, how do you feel about Hugo Chavez is going to end his contract with Verizon there? You feel sad for Verizon there at the service you get from them?
Yeah, I'm all tore up.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, I hope nobody minds me saying this. Do you remember back in the bad old days, we had a fractional T1. It was called Frame Relay Service. The Internet people will understand better than I do. And it was 256K of a T1 burstable to 384, and it was up and down that way. And every time it thundered, not rained, just thundered, every time it thundered, we lost that service. Now, Verizon guaranteed that service at 99.9%, okay? By the time we had lost our service twice, it was mathematically impossible for Verizon to fulfill its contract with us.
Yeah.
All right? So we called, we complained, and we finally told them, look, this don't work. Get it out of here. I've got a bill from Verizon right now for that service for $9,000, Spike.
Yeah,
$9,000 on a contract that they breached.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay it.
So personally, well, if they could find whoever it is that's ordered that bill to be generated, I would hope he's in Venezuela, and I'd see if I could get a favor from Hugo.
Well,
you know, a little waterboarding, you know, nothing serious, just some, you know, like Rush Limbaugh says, yeah, you know, just some fraternity, yeah, it's just fraternity pranks.
Yeah, just a little getaway to Gitmo Island, Club Gitmo, yeah.
You know, but I'm a captive here. My choices are, I mean, this is the ultimate Hobson's choice where we are. I can choose the horse by the door or no horse at all. If I go with some other provider, the last leg of the journey is always Verizon.
Well, you know, and you're not the only one that's done this. I heard a radio show the other day, just a sports show on a sports network that's on Sirius and AM affiliates all over the country, and the two hosts who do it, you know, remote away from the main studios, had to do it over the phone for the whole 2 hours, apparently, because their Verizon line was down. I mean, and you want to talk about embarrassing. Imagine, basically, you have to do the whole show on a cell phone, calling into someone.
Yeah.
You know, and they've been creating bad service in every avenue. I had so much problems with them with the phone. They wouldn't let me take a phone number over there. Horrible. Oh. And they've monopolized parts of this city.
Oh, Spike, when we were trying to set this thing up, now, bear in mind, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, this house just passed its 70th Thanksgiving and its 70th Christmas. For those 70 years, Verizon has had no trouble whatsoever finding us, Verizon and its predecessor, C&P Telephone. They've never had any problem finding us with a bill. But for one solid month, and I've got the emails to prove it, from Verizon Tech Support, we can't find your service address. You know, at one point I got so frustrated, I said, call the billing department. They know exactly where we are.
Yeah, they want $100 out of me. And some for a few weeks I didn't live at the residence and the number was turned off. You know, I had told them to turn the number off on a certain day. To my knowledge, they did, but yet they wanted to charge me for the remaining weeks, and I gave them a 30-day notice on the shutoff, so it wasn't like I gave them a last-minute notice. They had plenty of time to know that the phone's going to go off at that time, and they want the money all the way through the end of September. It's like, no, I only used your service for 10 days in September, not 30. So, yeah.
Right, and you've got to ride them like a borrowed mule if your service goes down.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to call. Okay, you're going to prorate my bill for the day I didn't have service, right? Huh? What? Yeah, you are.
Yeah. It's the worst utility I've ever dealt with. Seriously.
And of course, a right winger would say, "Well, you know, that's because, that's because it's regulated." No, that's because it's not regulated enough.
Yeah, man, it's a ridiculous bureaucracy where people don't know what's going on there.
You know, frankly, I'm waiting for Verizon to sue us, and when they do. We're gonna file through our counsel a counterclaim that would hopefully get their attention.
Yeah. I hope they rot. I really hate that company and what they've done to their workers too. You know, their blue collar workers, they lay off like it's going out of style.
Oh, I know.
You know, and that I. My favorite was when I went to a Phillies game once, and they were giving out visors that day, and they were in a labor dispute, you know, with the union saying they didn't have money to give them a raise if they were sponsoring a visor event. So there, a bunch of guys from the union were out handing out flyers from that. Somewhere I still have that flyer.
Well,
Verizon lied about.
Somewhere in the D.C. area, I know that these programs are brought to you by our good friends at the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. And one of our listeners, Billy, sent me a copy of a flyer he got at a Verizon job site. And Verizon, they won't even hire people and pay them reasonable wages on a construction job. Wages, benefits, pension stuff, health care. And, the folks at Mark were just doing an informational handout. Just telling people what's going on there. Verizon is just awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
And they look at it like, well, you know, the Latins and the Indians, they'll do the blue-collar labor for $10 an hour. No, they think they'll be living rich. That's how they look at it when they make these decisions. I mean, essentially, that's what the reality of our immigration policy here is. It's to serve the mega corporation.
Sure.
You know, and by the way, I gotta laugh about something. The big to-do about Schwarzenegger's medical bill he passed. Isn't it ironic? What he's doing to small business owners there is what they're claiming a raise in minimum wage would do. He's now going to burden any small business that can't provide health care to their employees. They have to pay more taxes now in California as part of that plan.
Mm-hmm.
So someone who only has two employees could have to pay more in taxes because they can't afford a health insurance plan like a big company could.
Well, at some point in time, big business is going to figure out that the health care debate is about them.
Yeah.
The thing that could change the attitudes toward health care in this country more than anything else will happen the day that the CEO at GM looks up and goes, you know, Toyota is about to become the number one car maker in the world and surpass GM. Why did that happen? Well, part of that is because they manufacture cars in places where health care costs for their workers are reasonable. Toyota, you know, they're siting plants in Canada because Canada, you know, has that communist socialized health care.
Yeah.
And when people like GM figure that out, then suddenly it's going to be a pro-business debate, and we'll have universal health care day after that.
And the interesting thing about Toyota, they're non-union in the South and Southeast. Northern California is a union operation.
You know? Is it really?
Yeah, where they make all their plants, where all the trucks come from, that's actually a union shop. But in the South, I guess the Southerners, don't take this the wrong way, but it's the truth because of the textile industry. They're just happy to get a job that pays something decent.
Well, right, because they've had almost a generation of right to work.
Yeah. You know,
which is actually right to work for less, or right to starve, or right to work three jobs instead of one.
Yeah. The North American Free Trade Agreement destroyed the South before the North. The North just is starting to fall now with this whole globalization, sending manufacturing overseas. The South was hit. Even basically before the bill was truly written.
Well, you know, I love hearing Republican Congress critters and senators from states that don't have a contiguous border with Mexico complaining about illegal immigrants. Frankly, I grew up in Alabama, from the 60s to the 70s and more or less left after the mid-80s. And there weren't very many Hispanic people there. But you get the rise of this right to work movement, and suddenly, I mean, that's why the immigrants have gone to these states, and why there's such a humongous population now, because the employer, the people there, voted themselves right out of a living wage.
Yeah.
And they are still having their prejudices used against them.
Yeah, you know, when people talk about the illegal immigrants, the Irish are habitual offenders of that, but no one ever mentioned putting up a border with the Emerald, you know, putting a big wall up along the East Coast to keep their ship coming from the ships from Ireland, you know. It's really one group that's singled out. The Indians aren't really that singled out, and they're here in droves, too.
Yeah, but if I was to, I dare not say anything about the Irish. Because I'm within arm's reach of Agnes.
Well, I'm an Irishman. I read the Irish Echo, and you should hear the much different debate about the immigration policy.
But no, you're absolutely correct. There's a humongous Irish immigrant population in this country about which little or nothing is said, and that fact proves the racism and the bigotry of the likes of Tom Tancredo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Buchanan's the big one screaming about it, too.
Exactly.
I might get the magazine, but I'll call it spade a spade. You know, what do you think he's bent out of shape about it? You know, I'm sure if Israel was invading us from another corner, he'd be upset too.
Patrick Buchanan.
He doesn't know what to do now. Anyway.
No, Patrick Buchanan makes me feel like I'm on drugs.
Well,
and don't want to be.
Well, now you know why Thompson enjoyed the ride talking to him. You had to be heavily medicated to deal with him. That's, luckily for me, I'll be heavily.
I didn't tell the poor bastard about the bats. He'd see them soon enough.
And you put a song, by the way, that was in the movie, so do One More Toke.
Yep.
Earlier in the night, it gave me a little flashback to that scene in the Red Shark. But well, before I go, I just want to also let you know Majestic uniforms, right?
Yeah.
They make all the baseball uniforms and stuff. I hear a Southern company, which no doubt will probably be the end of Majestic, is looking to buy them out and by the way, Majestic is a union operation up here.
Oh, no.
What they make in the United States, they do outsource some stuff, too, though. But the stuff that is made in America here, it's a union operation in Bangor, Pennsylvania. And trust me, there's plenty of jokes in Pennsylvania
about that
town name.
Yeah, probably not far from Intercourse, Pennsylvania.
No, we also have Blue Ball, Bird and Hen. We have a few White Deer Furnace. We have a few strange town names in this state. It's a big state. A lot of towns had to be named. Not all of them. Trust me, go to Alaska. I'm sure there are even stranger names there.
Yeah, what route do you drive on the bread truck there, Phil? Oh, I go from Bangor to Intercourse.
Peckville.
Oh, God, you're going to get me in trouble.
Yeah, and these are all real towns here in the Commonwealth.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Now you understand why the people that come from Pennsylvania are the way they are. That's how we get Rick Santorum, Jimmy Spencer, anyone who's a weirdo from Pennsylvania. Now you understand. We're our own world here.
And if you don't like it, you can always go to the moon. Just outside Pittsburgh. Well, you take it easy, Spike.
All right, you too.
Later. A break, and we'll come back to more of your phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4. Head on. Oh, one of my favorites. We'll be back. I'm Bob.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
The environment is issue number one. Does the idea of genetically modified food cause you to lose your appetite? Do you prefer green over greed? Do rising sea levels and vanishing polar ice cause you concern about our planet and what we are doing to it?
Would you like news with attitude on the environment, organics, renewable sources of energy? Well, then join me, John Fox, for Foxed Up. Weekdays, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. in the UK, and 9 a.m. here in Sydney, where conversation radio becomes conservation radio, and we turn it straight up to 11, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Lars Ulrich from Metallica. You know, protecting your hearing may not be something that you're thinking a lot about right now, but take it from me that after a few years of being exposed to loud music and other such things, that hearing loss and a constant ringing in your ears have become a problem for me and could also become a problem for you. If you want more information about this, call the Hear Hotline. The number is 415-773-9590.
Welcome back. This being a prayer meeting and all, got to get a church story in. About 25 minutes before the hour, 25 minutes left in the program, 25 minutes until George W. Bush signs the death warrants on 22,000 more troops. You know, here in America, we have a problem with Roman Catholic priests who just can't stay away from little children. You know, there's an old joke out there. The parish priest has to go to the restroom, and he's been taking confession all day long. And he's got old Mrs. Murphy coming in. And so he leans out, and the janitor's sweeping out the sanctuary. And he calls him in and says, "Look, old Mrs. Murphy's coming in. She never has anything to confess. Just tell her to say a couple of Hail Marys and go and sin no more." And so the janitor does. And in the meantime, Mrs. Murphy comes in for the first time in her life. She says, "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I had carnal knowledge of a man not me husband." And the janitor, of course, is just flummoxed. He doesn't know. And he says, he leans out the confessional booth, and one of the altar boys is up there and goes, "Hey, kid, what's father give for a Hummer?" Kid goes, "Snickers and a Coke." Ba-dum-bum. Well, that's the problem we have with the church here in America. In a way, I think they've got something even sleazier and more scandalous going on in one of the most devout nations of Europe. News has been breaking out of Poland. This from the Associated Press. Poland faces a national crisis from the resignation by Warsaw's new archbishop after admitting that he, wait for it, cooperated with the communist-era secret police, the prime minister said this past Tuesday. Archbishop Stanislaw Wielgusz stunned the faithful Sunday by stepping down minutes before his official installation mass. And it rattled the people there because they are a devout people and they place great trust in their religious leaders. And another prominent clergyman, the rector of Krakow's Wawel Cathedral, also left his post for similar reasons Monday. And there were warnings that there are more people who are going to be outed as totalitarian collaborationists. A book is being published by a priest, the Reverend Tadeusz Iszkowitz Zaleski. And he says that book will document the secret police's penetration of the church in Krakow. intelligence agents persecuted the Polish church in the 1980s and basically put several high-ranking members of the church on the payroll. Dig it. This is all going down at the same time that the former Karol Wojtyla had been elevated to the papacy. And it puts an entirely new dynamic spin, if you will, on how it was that Poland broke the back of the Soviet satellite bloc. Because remember, you know, if you listen to right-wing radio, they will tell you that Ronald Reagan won the Cold War. And they will tell you that Ronald Reagan won the Cold War with some help from a man of faith. And that Pope John Paul was actually the one who broke the back of the communist bloc. Shh. We know better, don't we? The right wing and the church have done everything in their power to make us forget the name of one of the bravest men who lived in the 20th century. A man, an iron worker from a shipyard in what had once been Danzig, Germany, and became Gdansk, Poland. A man with a big heart, a bigger spine, and a big mustache. A man named Lech Wałęsa, who put the brakes on everything at the Gdansk shipyards. It wasn't Karol Wojtyla, now considered for sainthood, and the gang of Soviet spies working in the church underneath him. It was, dare I remind us all, labor. Working people. Standing on their hind legs and changing things for the better. Do you remember, those of you who are old enough, do you remember that beautiful Polish word that entered our vocabulary about that time? Do you remember the white banners, little more than bed sheets, with red letters scrawled across them? Solidarność. Solidarity. Do you remember how it signaled the beginning of the end of the Soviet Union when they were able to stand up to the entire Soviet power structure and say, no more, we work too hard, we will be treated like human beings? And then the church rode on its coattails, and Ronald Reagan rode on Lech Wałęsa's coattails. There's a lesson there for us. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. And indeed, that lesson was manifested even to some degree, a little bit honorably, in the minimum wage debate. For in that minimum wage debate, we saw organized labor, who, for the most part, don't have to worry about making minimum wage because they are, in fact, organized labor, and organized labor provides them, via solidarność, solidarity, provides them with a wage in excess of the minimum a wage that one may actually call a living wage, provides them with health care benefits, provides them with a meaningful pension, meaning that there can be dignity in old age and in retirement. You could argue that organized labor does not have a dog in the minimum wage fight. You could argue that, but you would be wrong. Because every good thing that has ever happened to a working stiff in America has happened because organized labor has stood up and demanded that the people who make this country work and make this country go and make the rich richer be treated with some modicum of decency and respect in their own right. Labor Day? The weekend? The 40-hour work week? Workers' compensation? Unemployment compensation? Occupational pneumoconiosis or black lung legislation? The Occupational Safety and Health Administration? They all come to you because of the hard lessons learned and the hard work done by organized labor. And lest we forget, organized labor even won the Cold War. And we find out via the reporting of the Associated Press that spies were hard at work inside the Polish Roman Catholic Church, working against everything that Lech Wałęsa stood for. And you wonder why I distrust organized religion. Because, you see, there's not much of a difference between Soviet spies in the Roman Catholic Church in Poland and what we learned in our own hard history here in West Virginia. Because long before the church was infiltrated by Soviet spies in Poland, 100 years before, coal companies paid the preachers in the coal camps to inform their flock that joining a labor union was dirty and satanic and communist. There was no greater opponent of organized labor in the earliest bad old days of the attempts to organize the coal fields than a man with a Bible in his hand. Let's go to Wayne. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
All right, man. Listen, I was going to call up and apologize for that drunk guy that called the other night, but it's too late. You know, he's probably pretty loaded again. Hey, did Goofy talk yet? I just got back from the...
No. Goofy's just waiting for the Xanax to kick in. It's about 13 minutes till.
Oh, what, he's going to do it at 9?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, we got... In a way, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I mean, I hear things, you know, he's going to say that all things went wrong and, you know, all we have to do is get 20 or 30,000 more of our kids killed again and it'll make it right. And...
Oh, yeah. And by the way, Wayne, the reason they haven't been able to get it right thus far...
Yeah.
Doesn't have anything to do with the fact that Eric Shinseki told him it would take 500,000 troops and he decided not to. No.
How come it is?
He's going to explain to all us dummies that restrictions on existing troops, you know, and I'm just waiting to see if he actually says existing troops because...
You mean they're not allowed to murder, rape, and torture more people?
At will, right.
Yeah. Okay.
But if he says existing troops, I'm going to have one of those Elvis gun moments.
Okay.
You know... God, restrictions on existing troops are what has kept us from succeeding.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
Listen, I had a very good experience today in West Virginia, and watching down there and the new speaker taking over and the new legislators. So it's there's more union members in the legislative body this year than there ever have been, and
I'd say that's probably a good thing.
It's a very good thing, and the Democrats nationally are becoming more and more emboldened, and my hope is this speech will be the end of this man and all his silly people and fascists, the whole nine yards. And I think that's happened, but we're the ones that have to make that happen.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, as I said, you probably didn't catch the beginning of the program, Wayne.
I'm sorry, I haven't heard it.
Yeah, don't let it happen again, okay?
I'll talk to the governor about that.
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Tell him to check my schedule.
Look,
will you?
Yeah, man. I mean, 6 or 9 here.
Yeah, but no, seriously, I hope it's the end of him too. But the fact of the matter is, he's already got plans out there to start sending the troops in 3 weeks' time, Wayne. And he doesn't care if the Congress has hearings or the Congress has a game of Red Rover, send more troops on over. He does not care. There is one thing and one thing only that will stop this man. Impeachment.
Exactly. But, there's a pause, it's a little less than 3 weeks. The week of the 27th, 24th, 20, there's supposed mm-hmm. to be all kind, we need millions of people.
Yeah, we do.
Let's listen, and maybe this speech tonight will embolden a lot of other people to say, bullshit, I'm taking a week off, I'm going to D.C.
Yeah, there's a march on the 27th, and then there's visit Congress Day on the, let me do the math real quick, 29th, January 29th, Monday.
Well, American people have to speak up.
They do.
We've elected the Democrats. We've changed the thing. Now we have to, the way these people get emboldened, is by the people emboldening them. We need demonstrations. We need mass amounts of people there.
Yeah.
And the Democrats will get the things to do it, man. No, it's just that simple.
Well, I hope so. I sincerely hope so, because this, Buzz Flash said it very well. I have said it numerous times. I said it just a few minutes ago. We are talking about death warrants.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
On American young people.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
And I don't care how they frame it. The fact of the matter is, the answer still remains, get out now. And we don't get any closer to getting out by sending 11,000 or 22,000. Because he says he's going to send 11,000 at first, and then if the Iraqis shape up, he'll send another 11. And, either we need 20...
if they shape up, we'll send more.
Yeah. We either need 22,000 or 40,000 or 100,000 or 500,000 there right now, or we need them not at all.
The magic number is not at all.
Right.
Zero.
Yeah. Come home.
Exactly. Let them do what they may, eventually.
And frankly, it's going to be a terrible mess, Wayne. If we had any sense at all, we would be talking to the Saudis. We would be talking to the Jordanians. We'd be talking to the Egyptians.
It's going to be a terrible mess tomorrow or 5 years from now.
Right, but the thing is, the terrible mess might be averted by a multinational force made up of people who actually speak the language and can hear the guy snickering up his sleeve, hey, that sucker's about to drive over a bomb, and actually understand what it means in Arabic.
Yeah. Well...
a loner army for the new Iraqi government. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt that they're really going to have a government. Let's get them a loner army that speaks Arabic.
Oh, that ain't that sounds all right.
Yeah, and let's have a little conversation with the Syrians and have a little conversation with the Iranians. Oh, we can't talk to them. Why not?
Well.
The Iraq study group did suggest that we do that, but.
Yeah, but who the hell are they?
Well, the Iraq study group hates America.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Jesus.
But, We'll see. We'll see what Goofy got to say here.
Well, I suggest ice cubes and something about 80 proof.
I'm drinking beer tonight, but
well, okay.
But
that'll
it'll
do
be
too.
Cold.
That, oh, that works.
Won't be cubes there, but it will be cubes.
Thanks, Wayne.
All right, brother.
Bye now.
Bye.
And on to our good friend Susan from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan. Hello? Hello?
Is that better?
There you are.
You mentioned him signing the death warrant of $22,000. It's going to be more than that.
Well, sure.
Yeah, there was a...
I'm just talking about ours.
Yeah. No, on our side, because there was an item on the news at the hour that Maliki is warning the Shiites to put down their arms or face the wrath of the American troops. The only reason he's managed to do what the Americans have managed to do what they've done so far is because the only people fighting them are Sunnis. If they attack the Shiites, that means every Muslim in that country is going to be out for their blood. Now, what do you think is going to happen to the politics of this country when that entire army is chopped into so much hamburger?
I honestly don't know, because
I'll tell you.
Oh, please do.
First of all, they institute a draft. Secondly, all the controls stopping Bush from nuking Iran get lost.
And it's another damned cry for vengeance against somebody who had nothing to do with it.
You bet. Now,
God almighty, you know...
Yeah, this isn't just my theory. I heard it on Mike Malloy last night, and it scared the crud out of me. If you want to hear the full...
Well, look, I mean, where we're going eventually, Susan... you know, this is 11 to 22,000 more troops for Baghdad. Okay, they're going to Baghdad, and what we are doing is setting up what the French experienced at Dien Bien Phu in Vietnam. I know the right wingers hate it when we make Vietnam comparisons, but dadgummit, if the shoe fits.
Yeah, and it fits real well.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about, I'm sure you don't feel, you will feel the same way as I do. You don't want to get to 58,000 or more troops.
We don't have any more.
Wall.
We don't have room for another wall.
Uh-uh.
We don't have it physically. We don't have it, we don't have it psychically. We don't have it emotionally. And we morally don't have room for another wall on the mall in Washington, D.C.
Right. Oh, there is something the people do need to know about. Get on the net and go to codepinkalert.org.
Yeah, we've been talking about that.
Yeah.
You can enter your zip code there and find your nearest protest for tomorrow night.
Bet.
And people need to do that. Our good friend Phil from Daytona last night mentioned the fact that we've got to end our isolation.
Uh-huh. Also, another piece of real quick information.
Mm-hmm.
AP is reporting that as of tomorrow we will have another Democratic candidate in the running. Dodd.
Christopher Dodd?
You bet.
Not a bad guy, but not my guy.
No, not mine either. Give me Kucinich any day.
Right. He's the guy because he's the one who's talking the message that America has to hear.
Yeah. Get out now and defund the war.
Yeah, and start doing the business of America. Start taking care of American citizens, American interests, things inside this country. Start healing wounds. Susan, I mentioned in my conversation with Bob from North Dakota earlier about this old book I'm reading, and he's describing all these fallen apart towns that he drives through. There's a reason they fell apart.
'Cause they're dead.
Yeah, they fell apart after 8 years of Nixon and Ford and the economic disaster that they handed Jimmy Carter, and it's only gone further.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we've got to staunch that bleeding. We have got to make it turn around. We've got to make America be the America that made America great.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to let you go because you've got more calls.
Yeah, I got to take one more. Thanks, Susan.
Okay, you have a nice night.
You too. Bye-bye.
See you.
And I want to get to Ed, too. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I just picked up on the last part of your program, and I liked all the comments that was made. It was real good, covered the issue good. But I just want to make a comment on these preachers. I run into what you're talking about up in Spencer when we organized Norse Hubcap. They were sitting, they didn't know who we were, and we were sitting close to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about that area didn't need a union, and just putting them down. What I can't get past is those union people make more money than the regular workers. So in turn, they pay more tithes. And in other words, they take a cut at the people that pays the most money.
Yeah, but, the company pays more.
Yeah, I reckon a bunch of company sucks is what they amount to, too.
Yeah.
But I want to comment on something. Did you see what Bush added to this minimum wage thing if he signed it, the bargaining point he had?
No.
You might have covered. He says that the only way he'll sign that is if he gives these companies the tax breaks.
Oh, God.
So it's a trade-off. In effect, we'll up the minimum wage and we'll agree to it. I'll agree to it, is what he's saying. But you've got to give them more tax breaks. So it's just one sucky mess in my book.
Well, I noticed from the minimum wage vote we had today that is a veto-proof vote, 315 to 116.
You mean overriding a veto? Yeah.
Yeah. Now
I hadn't heard that, Bob.
We would have to come up with the same kind of number. You'd need 66 votes in favor in the Senate. So that's where we've got to be aiming.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't see. What do you think? Do you think they can drop that amendment that he put there?
Well, no, God only knows what he'll do with a signing statement, Ed. I mean, I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, but God only knows. He'll declare that the minimum wage will take effect as soon as he gets tax cuts and put it on a signing statement and have done with it. At some point in time, we are dealing. Congress has got to learn that they're dealing with a lawless. That they're dealing with an outlaw.
Yeah.
An outlaw, pure and simple. I know that bothers some of the centrists and the middle of the roaders and the lukewarmers, but the fact of the matter is he is an outlaw in his own country and in the eyes of his own constitution. And unless the centrists realize it, they're party to the destruction of their own country.
Yeah. Well, the same thing Saddam Hussein done to hundreds of thousands, Bush has done to 3,000, plus the civilians that he's had.
Yeah, plus
nothing but a murdering rat.
Exactly. Ed, we do have to go on. I wish I'd gotten to you earlier. It's always so good to hear from you.
Well, I am sorry that I didn't.
Listening to the Venture 3 Radio Network.
Democrats to challenge Bush's Iraq plan. Campaign photo shows Bush with Abramoff. U.S. hits Al-Qaeda in Somalia. U.S. submarine and Japanese ship collide. General says North Korea may conduct another nuclear test. Israeli Prime Minister arrives in China. Russians turn off Europe's oil supply. New video of Saddam's corpse on the internet. Governor seeks sweeping health system reforms. MSNBC wins the first presidential debate. Oil prices sag to about $54 a barrel. Zoo puts humans on display. Tony Blair says, I won't give up flights. DeMint endorses Romney for president. Sharpton considers running for president. And I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. I'm Jeff Allen Wolf. More ahead. Up next.
live from Studio 19 in Arizona, it's Jeff Allen Wolf, again on the Venture 3 Radio Network.
And a big hello from Studio 19, Jeff Allen Wolf, back again with another show, 3 hours today. Make up your mind. That's right. Ah, I love a little bit of Tom Sessa music. Fellow in South Florida I used to go see and his band, and kind enough to let us use his music, especially written for the show. And hello, welcome back. Welcome back. Venture 3 Radio Network carrying the Jeff Allen Wolf Show 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. Samantha, good day to my producer here in the studio. We're back for another day, another round of news, another round of silliness and craziness on the show. We've got a lot of email from all the different networks who are carrying our show. We want to thank everyone out there. We have one viewer used to television, one listener email that came in particular I want to read. But I want to thank everyone who took the time to welcome us aboard, to our existing listeners, our Wolfpack listeners, and to the new people that found us who took the time to write us at wolfpacktalk@yahoo.com. Thank you. Really appreciate it. It's fun to see new faces, read new emails from different people from around the country. And